It keeps going off. Stephanie, would you call roll, please?
Joyce Still.
Here.
David Happ.
Here.
Cheryl Hanley Maxwell. Mike Smith. Deb Roush.
Here. Okay, item three, I'd like to make a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The agenda is approved. Item four, citizen input. Nobody has anything to present to us today? Okay, thank you. Just one comment from me today, just that the Disability Resource Expo is coming up April 7th.
Yes, you know, we have some, I'll get posters and brochures.
Okay, very good. Everybody come on out and support it, please. It's, what time does it start? Is it 9 o'clock? At the Vineyard?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, on pages 3 through 9, we have board meeting minutes for two meetings. The meeting from January 24th and the meeting from February 21st, which was not official in that we did not have a quorum, but we still have minutes from that. Is there a motion?
I move.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, so the board meeting minutes from January 24th and February 21st are both approved as presented. Okay, turning to pages 10 through 13, we have financial information. The claims reports are included for both the February 9th meeting and the March 9th. Or they're both dated February 9th and March 9th for two consecutive months. I'd like to move that we present the claims reports, or that we approve the claims reports as presented.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The claims reports dated February 9th and March 9th are approved as presented. New business. A, board direction. We've kind of inserted this as an opportunity for board members to speak early in the meeting about anything that may be of concern or interest. Anybody have anything to contribute today?
So you will have a new three-year plan to look at, draft three-year plan to look at, maybe September or October, and I thought that it would be nice to have at least one meeting where you're talking about vision, and that could be July, and we might have different board members by July, but then I was thinking that a really nice tool that I've seen recently is a SurveyMonkey with about, I think it had about 10 or 12 questions. It was being used for strategic planning for the state association, and I thought that might be an interesting way to get your input sooner than July, just on the direction for the next three-year plan. So if there's some interest in that, we might shoot for May or June. We're on track to look at program summaries and talk about the applications in your April meeting, and then we'll have a recommendation, we'll have a decision memo with recommendations for funding in May. So there would be a little bit of time in May or June you would fill out the survey, not at the meeting, but then we could start to create some broad statements about the vision for the next three-year plan.
Well, that sounds like an interesting way to gather some information from board members in advance. Sounds good. Okay. Item B, the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission Independent Service Coordination Team, or some are here, right, to make a presentation. There's information on pages 14 through 23 to support the presentation.
All right, great. Thank you. My name is Katie Harmon, so I'm one of the Community Services Program Managers at Champaign County Regional Planning Commission, and I oversee the Independent Service Coordination Program with Regional Planning Commission, which also includes the Decision Support Program, which is funded by the County Board. So just kind of a brief overview. Many of you probably already know this, but I just thought it was an important point to include. So Regional Planning Commission is one of 17 independent service coordination agencies in the state of Illinois. And our primary purpose for this particular program is to ensure services and supports are responsive to the unique needs and desires of each individual and to promote independence, community inclusion, and self-determination. And this was included in our grant application, so I'm not going to read it verbatim here. But our target populations and the new piece of our program this year are our transition consultants, which I'll talk about kind of a little bit later in the program and kind of differentiate between what they're doing and the other component of our program. So for our transition consultants, the second bullet point there, we're really targeting people who are graduating and transitioning out of secondary education and in need of adult services. And I'll get more into depth what those services are. And then also individuals who are registering on PUNS who would like to complete preference assessment. So we gather data from the preference assessments, which I included should be in the board packet of the specific questions that we ask. So that's included in there. And I'm going to actually present some of that data that we collected for the first half of this fiscal year to show you. And then also individuals on PUNS who might need some additional support, who are in that critical category, we can provide additional case management support there. So these are the main services that we provide. So we do a lot of community outreach about PUNS, Medicaid waiver services, and then now transition consultant services, linkage to community resources. We can assist individuals in the critical category of PUNS with gathering information should they be selected from PUNS and kind of giving them kind of a heads up as to what would be required and expected from the state so they can be planning early. I know we all know people can sit on PUNS for a very, very long time. However, we just want people to be prepared on what the next steps would look like should they be selected. And then we can also attend IEP meetings to assist with transition planning. So with this program, we're really trying to model the similar changes that were made across the state of Illinois with conflict-free case management and person-centered planning. So we're trying to incorporate those pieces of the state guidelines into our program here and then really develop a streamline of services from school to adult developmental disability services. Some of the outreach activities that we do and are kind of, I guess, cover these main areas. So education about PUNS, the preference assessment and waiver funding, linkage to services. We've been doing a lot of connection and outreach with high school professionals, special education, social workers. So that's kind of the main avenue which we're targeting for referrals for our transition consultant program. And then obviously education about transition consultant services and then trying to get referrals. So I'll talk a little bit later about how that's been going. These are just some examples of the outreach that we've done and then upcoming outreach. So we attend the monthly transition planning committee meetings. We've given information about PUNS and preference assessment at a guardianship training with CTF, and you can see the other events there. Obviously, we're going to be at the Disability Resource Expo. We've attended other community fairs, and we found out about Choices Family Resource Fair this Friday, which we'll be at. We've attended a Parkland volunteer fair, so we're just trying to attend as many outreach as possible, events as possible, to get the word out about our services. This is just the preference assessment data that we collect. So we collect that data either at initial PUNS enrollment and then also at annual updates. So we're the first contact for registration on PUNS, Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. The first meeting must be in person, and then information must be updated at least annually or more frequently if circumstances change. So Mary Rasher, one of our independent service coordinators, she kind of conducts these meetings and does the preference assessment. So this is when she's collecting that data. And the kind of main areas of the data that we're collecting are listed here. So we're really just trying to gauge people's preferences as to living arrangement, living location, what type of supports they might need, what kind of community opportunities they're looking for, leisure activities, and we collect demographic information, obviously, as well. But it's really interesting in compiling this data and then running some reports to see what the data is looking like. So this is just the first half of this fiscal year, some of the data that we received. This isn't including all of the questions. With our annual report at the end of the fiscal year, we'll provide all the details about the reports to the board. But I wanted just to give a snapshot of the data that we've collected so far. So for preferred living arrangement, I thought this was interesting. 38% of individuals served would prefer to live with family, 36% prefer to live alone. And then you can see the remaining breakdown, 16% with a roommate, and then 10% in a group home. So again, these are people's individual preferences. And some of this is a little bit hard to see with the, and I can also, I'll send out a copy of the slides to Kim and she can share them with the board. But where people want to live, I thought this was interesting too. It looks like a majority of people prefer and want to live in Champaign and Urbana. There was 11% of people who would prefer to live outside of Champaign County. And then some people didn't really have a preference between Champaign, just anywhere in Champaign County. Some people just said anywhere, Champaign, Urbana, Savoy. So we wanted to give people options of how they could, you know, if they didn't have a specific city within Champaign County. So this is kind of a breakdown of the responses that we received so far this fiscal year. And then this is a breakdown of employment and volunteer preferences. It just, you know, it's clear from this that the individuals we're serving have obviously a wide range of interests, which I think is great. For the other category, I just want to quickly mention what other encompass. So other encompass construction, automotive, outdoors, agriculture. So people could select other and then identify a specific area. The arts, trade work, health services, so a wide range of interests there. But it looks like the majority have selected food service, followed closely by factory, and then, again, breakdown of the remaining responses. And this is what type of community opportunities would you like? And you can see the breakdown there. It looks like the top four of community opportunities people reported were Special Olympics, CUSR, health and wellness, and church. And then what kind of supports do you need? So there's a lot of different, and for this, people could select all that applied, so they didn't have to just select one. So this is kind of the main breakdown. There's a pretty even breakdown between independent living, medical, financial, transportation, vocational services, and then the rest, socialization, some other categories there. Any questions about, or should I say questions at the end would be best? Okay. So if you have any questions about this specific data, and like I said, I'll send out a copy of the slides so you have all of this information as well. But just let me know as I'm going if you have any specific questions. I wanted to include, I know this is a lot of information on one slide, but I wanted just to include this because this is kind of encompassing the model of services with our program that through the Developmental Disabilities Board that we're trying to move forward, trying to closely model with the state and federal Medicaid guidelines with conflict-free case management. So you may already know this, but I just thought it was important to include really separating the case management functions, including the development of the person-centered plan from service delivery functions. So conflict-free means that case management must be performed by someone other than a relative of the person served, someone other than a direct provider of service, someone who does not have a financial interest in a provider, or someone who is not employed by a provider. Yeah, go ahead.
The conflict-free, I'm just going to give you an example. Mm-hmm. My son is someone who needs adult services. Mm-hmm. If there is no one with him and he is talking to a case manager, he will wait for you to tell him what he should do in order to please you. Not necessarily to give you information.
Okay.
It's just basically, if it's conflict-free, leaving out someone that is a support to the person,
sure,
could make it very difficult, and you could get skewed information.
Sure, and I think, and I'm glad you said that, because that does not mean, and so when we're, just for an example, not at the changes with the state level, now that IS independent service coordinators are doing the development of the personal plan, during the discovery process, we include anyone that that person wants to include and is important to that individual. So that includes family, that can include a neighbor, a friend, and that does include providers of direct service that are giving that input through the development of the plan. So it's definitely not that we're working in this silo and not connecting with the natural supports and already, you know, resources that are important to that person and that would help in that process. So it's really, you know, including lots of people's input in that development, if that helps clarify at all.
That's good to know. I'd like to know a little bit more about how that actual intake, excuse me, of information is done. I mean, there are times when I know that parents have an agenda. Everybody has an agenda. One of the things that, you know, the state tends to think that people that have a disability, a developmental disability, can make these independent decisions. And they can to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the life of that person,
sure,
yeah, a lot of intake would, it seemed to me, a lot of information would have to be given by someone other than that person.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the discovery process, and these are the tools that the state has developed, a discovery tool, that's how they refer to it, and then the personal plan. The discovery tool can encompass multiple meetings. It's not going to take place just one sit-down generally. So our independent service coordination team who are working with individuals who are receiving Medicaid waiver services, I mean, it's a new year and it's a new process for us, obviously, and it's a huge change. But we're really, really trying to get a grasp of what that's going to look like and figuring everything out. But a lot of times those meetings can be in person with the individual, their family, providers, again, other supports that they might have. So it's a really, it can be quite detailed. And the questions that are encompassed in the discovery, it's pretty thorough. And I'd be happy, if you haven't seen it, I'd be happy to share it with the board, those two documents, so you can really see what we're working with for that. You're welcome. So the case management support, specifically with the decision support program here, our goal is to, you know, provide linkage to community resources, and this might not just be, you know, talking about adult developmental disability services. We're also trying to provide linkage to other services and community resources that individual and family might need. When I say brief service plan development and goal planning, we're really just trying to assess what the short-term and long-term goals are and to try and put some action steps around there and to support that individual and family. And then just kind of providing assistance and gathering required documentation. The goal for this is for people on PUNS and emergency or critical categories, we really want to expedite the process if they were to be selected from PUNS. So we're not, you know, spending a lot of time if they still need to apply for Medicaid or, you know, they don't know where their Social Security cards are or school records. We're trying just to give people a heads up about what would be needed. So if they were selected from PUNS, we can move as quickly as possible in that process. There's a lot of paperwork on our end and obviously identifying a provider. But some of this other stuff we can work with families on early to get that accomplished. So transition consultant services. There is also a flyer in your board packet that's been circulating around, so you may have seen it multiple times already by now. This is the new part of our program this year. And so these are the main areas of support and what we're trying to do in this new program. In the flyer, I just want to make a kind of quick point here. At the top of the flyer, we're saying we are kind of targeting individuals who are graduating in the next 6 to 12 months. This is a new program, and we're really just trying to assess what the needs are. If someone doesn't fall within, that's really soon, and transition planning should be happening much earlier, obviously. And so we've been getting referrals from people who are, you know, sophomores and juniors, and that's totally fine. So we might need to edit that. But please, we're encouraging, you know, any referrals. And it doesn't have to be just within those months of graduation. So we're identifying, helping to identify a transition plan. Our goal would be to meet with individuals and families before an IEP meeting and really assess what their needs are and what they're hoping for, if they'd like us to attend the IEP meeting to support them, and then beginning after that, planning for, you know, the transition after school. And obviously it's another way to have a streamlined linkage of individuals from who are in a school setting to learning about PUNS and registering for services. I know it's really daunting, and you know there's a lot of frustration of people who've been on PUNS for many, many, many years. However, I think it's important to know about. We, you know, meet with families and individuals often who are, you know, in their late 20s or early 30s and graduated from school. They have no idea what PUNS is, and they've never been connected to services. So we're really trying to prevent that and make sure people are connected and have a plan early on. So there's currently no limit on a number of meetings with families. We can meet with families at the school setting if they prefer, at our offices, in a community setting, at their home, whatever is really best for them. We're really trying to meet the needs. So we've been doing a lot of different things. Our kind of main projects at this point, so Sheila Krein and Sarah Wilhelm, who are here, also, hi, Sheila, Sarah. So they're our transition consultants, and so they've been working really hard and meeting with providers to just have a better knowledge and understanding of the services provided and just to let them know about the transition consultant services. So if we haven't already contacted you, we probably will be providers. Meeting with key contacts within the schools. We've gone to a couple in-service trainings with special education teachers at the school to let them know about these services and to get referrals. So that's been great. We've been invited to attend several IEP meetings. Development of personal plan is we're just trying to identify the best tool and resource to use in helping you know, people establish short-term, long-term goals, what that transition will look like, and so that's what I mean by that. So that's kind of in progress. We have something identified, but I think we're going to tweak it as we go. We're compiling resources and information for families to give to them when we meet with them. And then we've also done some outreach targeted mailings. We've done a couple different mailings to school professionals, special education teachers and directors and social workers to refer them just with our flyer and to let them know about our program and to please refer families who are interested to us. But then we've also done outreach to individuals and families on the PUNS list who are between 17 and 20 years old, and we might do another one or 21 people in the young adult programs, maybe a little bit earlier, but that's just kind of what we've done initially and have gotten some feedback from that, which has been great. We also don't want to overwhelm people, so when Mary Rasher, our independent service coordinator, is meeting with people for their PUNS update and then doing the preference assessment, if the family gives us permission, we'd like to have one of our transition consultants also attend that meeting, if they have someone who's going to be transitioning out of school, so we can provide a little support in that meeting. But again, we're not trying to inundate people with giant meetings and a lot of people at those meetings, so that can be overwhelming. Clients served so far in the first half of this fiscal year. We're a little bit behind on our community service events and outreach, but I feel like with what we have scheduled this fiscal year, we'll be close to that target. Yeah.
So you're moving back to
the program?
Yes. Yes.
So this is actually more of a clarification than a question.
Sure.
The transition consultant is unique to this community because you're funding it, right? And it's very recent. It's just this year, and you put together the structure and then hired the people.
Yes.
So just for context, this is identified as a huge system problem, not just in Illinois, but across the country. And my experience with it was more from the provider and family side.
Sure.
So, you know, that for a long time, agency providers and schools have been trying to cover this. So I hope that this is helpful from the agency provider side and to the families. But I wonder if you're finding that it's important for the schools to get information from you about what's actually available to people once they graduate,
yeah,
because
absolutely.
Of the state. Because I think it's been very hard for the schools to keep up as the state changes.
That's exactly right. And so I think it was 3 weeks ago, maybe, the in-service at Urbana High School was helpful in getting the word out about the program and just other resources. And then we recently, last Friday, did a presentation to the Transition Planning Committee that meets monthly about some of the changes and what we can offer, too. So we're hoping it will help with streamline and just another resource and support for people that's needed. We've already gotten referrals from some direct service providers who are developmental disabilities service providers, which has been awesome, so I appreciate that too. And the other component of the case management and support, that is also specific to our funded program with the Developmental Disabilities Board. So the transition consultant piece was a new aspect of the already kind of funded program with the case management and the preference assessment, and this is the new piece to it. But I did want to include some numbers of service contacts. So these are the number of individuals attending community service events. So while the number of community service events the first half of the fiscal year is a little low, the number of people attending is higher already than anticipated, which is great. And then we have served 134 people registering on PUNS and completing a preference assessment, updating preferences, and our target was 100, so we're already over that. And then our TPC, our clients assisted with case management and transition consultant services, so we're about 26, you know, close to halfway through our target. And I did want to give some demographics of clients served too, and so the main age range of people we're serving is 19 to 59 years old, and so we're also hoping with the addition of the transition consultant services that perhaps individuals in the 13 to 18 years old range, that might increase a little bit. Again, we're still assessing the need of of referrals and the family, who wants the services and what are their ages. I mean, we've been reached out to some referrals that we've received for someone who's in eighth grade, for example. You know, so we're really just trying to see what that really looks like and the breakdown of ages there. Here's a breakdown of race of clients served. I looked at this data, and it does mirror breakdown of racial demographics in Champaign County. But I think part of our program and our goal is to also reach underserved populations who, don't know about resources and maybe, don't have the advocacy skills or really know where to go. So I think our plan is to do some more targeted community outreach and trying to reach those underserved populations, and also connecting with the schools, and again, just ensure that that people are being referred to us if they want the services. And then here's the breakdown of gender. And these aren't percentages. These are actual numbers of people served in what location in Champaign County. So obviously Champaign and Urbana are way up there, followed by Rantoul. But it also kind of just tells us that in some smaller rural communities, we need to make sure that we're establishing contacts with important school professionals there and personnel to make sure that, families know about these resources and that they can access them. And we can go to them to meet with them. We can go to the school, somewhere in their home community that would be convenient. So transportation isn't an issue. So again, that's just another area in trying to reach some of these smaller communities too. And then I just had a brief slide on outcomes that we reported in our grant. So one of our outcomes was that 100% of persons eligible for services were given the opportunity to report their preferences. So we give this option to everybody, and out of the 134 people, 128 completed the preference assessment, so we thought that was great. They can refuse, and that's fine. We kind of explain the importance and why we're collecting the data, but if people don't want to, totally fine. 90% of individuals selected from PUNS that were provided decision support services will be found eligible. This was kind of not applicable because the people chosen in the April PUN selection weren't receiving the kind of case management support services. And then the last point is this survey is still under development, so. So we took this as, yes, we are. Okay. Yes, we are, as part of the PUNS. We took this as people who were getting the kind of the TPC clients, who are getting that more case management support, and out of those selected, they weren't our TPC clients. So I guess that's why I have not applicable. But I can tell you of the people that were selected from PUNS that we didn't have anybody who was found not eligible for services. And then the last point, our survey is still currently under development, so I'm working with Sarah and Sheila to develop a survey. We're working on it this week to start giving out to families so we can start collecting this data. Since it's a new program and we're kind of still seeing how things go, I started as the program manager in end of September of last year, so we wanted to have a stable foundation before we got a new kind of program up and running. So we are getting referrals, which is great, and we're meeting with families, and high schools that we've been in contact with have been really responsive and have been sending us referrals as well, so we're pleased with that. I think it will, again, just the outreach is important in getting the word out and really assessing what the need is and what people are looking for and how we can best support them. It's not going to look the same for every person, obviously, so we're interested in, continuing to see how we can support families. And that's all I have specifically. Are there any questions?
just a statement. You have a very big job.
Yes.
And thank you all for your
work. I blame
him
for not kidding.
And I think it's really important, too, just that global effort you're making to try to reach everybody or as close to everybody as possible and just providing information, because it is such a confusing thing for parents, especially that. So that transition piece, I think, is really important.
Absolutely. And I just, even though it's still nonetheless daunting and it's not always a super optimistic, like, oh, there's this great PUNS list and you might wait on it for 15 years. But, I mean, I still think the education piece is really important, and there are services and supports. Sorry, I don't know what happened there. That we can connect people with. And so I think it's just a matter of families having an additional support and resource for navigating this process, because it is so confusing. And again, hoping to develop the streamline of services from school and then transition and then hopefully into adult DD services.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you.
Sheila?
They've got a big job, but yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
So I put this on in front of the board members, and I put some at the edge of the table. I was going to just wait until my comments to tell you what it is, but I think it's pretty connected to what Katie was just talking about. This is a fact sheet related to a bill that's got some momentum in the Illinois General Assembly. We're watching a number of bills that are related to things like SILA monitoring, and that's thanks to the Chicago Tribune's relentless oversight of SILAs, and also to the DSP wage increase issue. But and those bills are, some of those bills are not perfect, so we're just watching some of them, and occasionally, like the one to support, obviously, would be the raise the wage to $15 an hour for everybody and adjust the rates, because that's been recommended for years and years, so it'd be great if they would just do it. But the other bill that we're very supportive of is this one, which expands the ability of communities to set up their own 377 or DD boards. Right now, only counties can establish a 377 board. This would allow townships and municipalities to do so as well. So there could be some relief in Cook and the Collar counties, where there are many townships within a county and lots of resources. So we like that bill because it allows communities to do what you have done. And in some ways, Champaign County is way ahead of everybody else, because you have a fairly generous tax levy to support additional services for people with DD, including this transition consultant and determining eligibility for people before the state would be in a position to do so. But the other reason I wanted to share this with you is that some of the facts that are listed in, like, to make the case for this bill are really scary. Like that really the wait time for people on the PUNS list, if they have a need for services, is 38 years if we continue at the pace that the state is, right? And then 105-year wait time just for people who are registered. So that's not people who have said, we really need services. So that's just not going to work. And I think what's important to me is that now there's recognition among communities, townships, municipalities, and counties that they need to do something else other than wait for the state. I think if this is passed and we do see in the emergence of more 377 boards, our work will become easier because we will have more communities to talk to about what they've tried and what's working well. So, but for now, we're the leader in this. So anyway, I mostly wanted to share the stats with you, but also importantly that this is moving forward and has a lot of energy. So, all right.
Okay, under new business, item C is the update on the Legislative and Policy Conference that Lynn attended in Washington, D.C. The information is on page 24, goes through page 62, lots of information. And did you want to share highlights of that now, or do you want to do that later on and as part of your report now?
Yeah, the first... Really, the things that are directly related to developmental... I did attend a number of workshops and seminars and a breakfast about early childhood services, and that's where the... You know, where we're really talking about family health and developmental delays and mental health. So those really, I think, are relevant to all and of interest to all. So those were really neat. There's a big national initiative to support a robust continuum of services. And so that was really exciting. Lots of training on trauma and the role of the adverse childhood events and factors like poverty and social determinants of health. That was all great. But the DD specific stuff that was most important was our visit to Capitol Hill to do a legislative briefing. It was very well attended. Not so many legislators, but a lot of aides, and they were taking lots of notes. And we had some really compelling speakers, one of whom was a mother of an adult with a developmental disability who's also the director of the National Association of Direct Support Providers, or National Alliance of Direct Support Providers. It was a really good event. We're going to discuss next week how to follow up with legislators. Tammy Duckworth is potentially a sponsor, but wasn't available, but an aide was there. What's really important, too, is that Kim Bowdrey worked on the subcommittee that put this together, and one of their products were the four information sheets that are included here, and they're really good. And we were trying to drill down to details like, say, people instead of individuals or consumers or recipients. And so they were hearing us and saying people instead of individuals, but then the title of the legislative briefing ended up being individuals. And so on the day of the briefing, I learned that, and I was like, oh. But you know, you win some and lose some. And I also included the PowerPoint presentation from that advocate because it has really important information about Medicaid. And we find ourselves, even though there's so much information about what would be really great directions for DD supports and services to go and what kind of things we could do, like our Employment First project here in Champaign County is one of the things people are dreaming about doing. So lots of great stuff, discovery process, and, you know, the customized employment has become, you know, it's kind of on fire as an idea. But we're back to talking about Medicaid because so many people with developmental disabilities rely on Medicaid for almost everything. I think it's also a huge piece of the Medicaid pie. And you might not be aware of it, but federal legislators are talking again about changing Medicaid substantially. And so that sort of became the purpose of this legislative briefing, is to really inform them of why it's important to us and what it does. So those attachments are included in this packet. I hope they're helpful. I know that some of them aren't totally readable, but we have electronic versions too if you're interested. So.
Thank you, Lynn. Okay, successes on other agency information. Does anybody have something to share today?
Hi, I'm Laura Bennett. I'm from Developmental Services Center, and I'm the director of what was formerly known as Developmental Training, a day program, now Community Day Services at the state level, and what you guys know as Integrated and Site-Based Services, or community first. So anyway, that's where I'm from. And what I want to tell you about is that within this portion of the day program, we have a supported employment specialist that has been hired and has been working with us for several months to try to get employment for many of the people who are in our day program. And I'm pleased to say that she has developed 4 opportunities for people where she will be providing ongoing support. So we will have a crew in a law office, a couple of people at a pizza place, another crew at a restaurant, and then we will be doing some work with a local church and starting in April. So we are very pleased, and what she is providing is opportunities for people to work 1 to 3 times a week within a business at shortened levels of employment, maybe a couple hours at a time. But she's hit the ground running and just developed some really, really cool opportunities for people, and they're excited. And several of the people that you guys support have received those opportunities, so it's very exciting.
Annette Becker, DSC. We have the site at 110 East University that we've been using most recently as a space to do art groups and various other community activities. We're really excited that it will be a venue for the upcoming Boneyard Arts Festival. And they're really excited about it. I guess it's going to be one of the top venues. Artists from DSC will be displaying their art along with 4 women, and the theme is going to be the human experience. So if you're out and about that weekend, please come out. It starts, our open hours are going to be Friday, April 13th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., and then Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. as well. Yes, the hours on Friday the 13th, 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., and then Saturday the 14th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
I'm Becca Obachowski with Community Choices, and we were going to just talk briefly about some of the updates from our collaboration on LEAP Employment First. We had a family meeting back in February, which was a very well-attended event. I think there was probably at least 35 people mm-hmm. there, maybe more. And it was a panel of self-advocates who had all been working in the community in various, various jobs and sort of various levels of support. Some of them were pretty new at their jobs. Some of them had been there for a while. So they all got a chance to speak not only to family members, but also to other self-advocates who were thinking about going into the community to pursue community employment. Were able to provide a lot of really, like, very, you know, boots on the ground information about what their experiences were like, what things were difficult, what things they liked about it, and just kind of some of the things they expected, some of the things they didn't expect. So that was a really a great meeting. A lot of excitement sort of generated from people being able to hear, you know, directly from the people who are using these community-based employment services. So that was a really exciting event. We also continue to reach out to new businesses. There's been a lot of interest lately. I think actually, probably very soon this morning. I'm not sure exactly what time it starts, but there's a group training up in Rantoul with a number of businesses sort of in some of the outer communities. So getting to know a little bit more about LEAP. So.
And that's actually the second training provided up in Rantoul. There was enough interest from businesses who weren't able to attend that they requested a second event.
So the group trainings have been going really well, and it's a nice way to get businesses sort of engaged with each other as well as with us. So it's been doing well. And then I had just a couple sort of updates in regards to community choices. We had a couple events coming up that I just wanted to share with you guys. One of them is coming up quite soon, and we sort of put it together last minute. John Fallon from CHS is going to be here on March 29th to talk about supportive housing. And so this is something that is specific to people with developmental disabilities, but also people with mental illness and sort of lots of different groups that relate to this board and just community services in general. So he's going to give sort of an overview about what supportive housing is, excuse me, and we'll have some time also for people who are looking at what that might look like for them to come and ask some specific questions. So that is going to be on March 29th, which is a Thursday evening at 7 p.m., 7 to 8:30 at the Champaign Library in the Pavilion Room C, the one right across from the little cafe there. So that's open to the public. I can send out an email if you guys are interested. I will share that around, but we'd love to have a big group. He has a lot of great information to share. There's other, there's things happening with Housing Authority here locally too, so there's a lot of excitement about that. So we're really happy to have him. We also, one of the parts of our grants is to do a sort of a community, like co-planned sort of just fun event. And so what we're doing this year, we've partnered with the Urbana Park District to do a, what we're calling, it was supposed to be a pun, it was supposed to be community palooza with like a pool, but that got spelled wrong on the original flyer. So it's not really a pun, but it is the community palooza is the name of the event. And that is something that is planned between the Urbana Park District, Community Choices staff, and some of the self-advocates that we work with, as well as some people from CUSR, and that's going to be at the Urbana Indoor Aquatic Center. So there's going to be games and activities with the idea that, this can be a place for people, whatever their ability level, to just come and have a good time. That's going to be on April 14th from 12 to 2 p.m. So there'll be a bunch of people there. Sort of the idea is that the self-advocates are going to be running the games and be in the leadership roles at that event to sort of help, families and young people see that, having a disability doesn't mean that you can't have a big and important role in your community. So we're really looking forward to that. And then I will stop talking soon. But we're also really excited that we've been working with a number of members of the cooperative to find supportive roommates, or what we usually call community builders. So we had one woman who has been looking. She has a place to live already, and we were able to help her find it's actually an undergrad student who's going to be moving in with her this August to provide sort of overnight support and just kind of as needed, helping her to sort of run the household, be a support, but also to be a peer and a roommate. So we're really excited about that. We also have two other individuals who are currently looking. So it's been a big kind of push with us lately, and we're really excited to see some it kind of going places. So thanks. Questions?
Okay, thank you all. Okay, moving on now to old business. Item A, meeting schedules are in the packet, pages 63 to 66. That's for the DDB and the MHB. The list of acronyms is on page 67 and 68. Item 10, CCMHB input. We don't have a member here, a board member here, but...
The Mental Health Board is meeting this evening at 5:30. Their agenda is not exactly similar to this. They have a first look at a draft of the annual report from last year. So that's one thing. I don't think they have a presentation tonight, do they? So it's the annual report and my 500-page NACO and NACBID report. They're at roughly the same place that you are in regard to reviewing applications. And hopefully they'll be making decisions on the same day that you do in May.
Okay. Moving on to the executive director's report, Lynn.
Well, I think I did it. I think it's okay. Sprinkled all throughout the meeting today. So.
Okay, item 12. Staff consultant reports are included from Chris Wilson and Barbara Bresner in the packet. Pages 69 to 71. Item 13, board announcements. Just again, the Disability Expo is coming up April 7th. 9 o'clock in the morning, Vineyard Church. Yes.
And if you want to volunteer, feel free to contact me or email me. I'm coordinating the volunteers.
Thank you, Chandra.
Deb.
Yes,
Joyce. Lynn handed me this, and it's about George Roth, who was the first director, I believe, of the Mental Health Board many years ago. I didn't really know George, but my dad was on the Mental Health Board with him for many years, and he respected him greatly. I did too. He died, but his influence in the community, his dedication, made a huge impact on the lives of many people, and I just thought he should be publicly acknowledged. That's all.
Any other announcements? All right.
We're just adjourned, right?
We are adjourned. Thank you all.